Friday afternoon deploy. It works on my machine, but it doesn't work on their machine.
Do you know how many of these podcasts since like April have started off with us discussing how badly I've messed up the board?
All of them.
That's correct.
That should become a new meme. That's like our new intro. It's just
Did I mess up on the board?
Why is the thing blanking?
I don't understand. Am I recording? Can I also say that I actually came in with a hot take on I don't like these. We sit
swivel
here on these chairs with like a half desk thing, and like,
we're gonna put a whole desk in here though. I mean,
but that's the thing, right? Like, everyone is in here with their laptops, so it makes sense. It's not wrong. They're called one-armed bandits, says Sarah from the corner, who's taking photos of us, but not participating.
They're like those old school high school desks, had in study hall
that's
can lean on, and that's about it.
The question
is about that wide.
Annoyed because it reminds me of high school, or
I think that's it. That's what I was wanting
this
to
could go deep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I was wanting to explore.
Big
there.
Enough, you can't take a nap on them.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. Precisely.
That was their plan all along.
All of the use that they actually should have, which, background human development, young men specifically
should not be waking up at 7 a.m.
in high school, should not be waking up that early.
It's wrong.
Should be getting a lot more sleep and need more caloric intake than like a short pregnant woman. It depends on how tall the woman is. That's why I say a short pregnant woman, because like if a woman's tall enough, then the caloric intake may be a little bit higher than those teenage boys. But
the deep dive.
Just being serious here. Why are we making?
Why are we making kids get up that early?
Get up that early.
I still don't know the answer.
I haven't heard
a good answer yet.
I know the answer that made sense when we were in, you know, agricultural economy, and you had to get up and get things cut and put together and all these things, but that's
not
true
anymore.
We're not that anymore, right? Exactly.
Depending on where you are in Arkansas,
what's the commodity
these
days?
Exactly. You know? But if you're actually doing that in Arkansas now, you're probably in the South and also falsely in prison. So, do you want to go into social deep dive, social justice deep dive too? Evan's eyes went up like, oh, Joseph, stop now. You're
pull up,
go. All right,
I will say, you know, like everything relative in context. These chairs are much better than chairs we had before.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So there you go. They're not so bad.
I wasn't.
Just get a bunch of lazy boys and lap desks.
Yes, that's true.
I need a thing that's like a pod that I could just knee back, and then I'm on my back writing code.
Yes.
Like, but in perfect posture would be great.
Yeah.
And they have those. And
should
like
we do
zero
that?
Gravity, like the zero gravity chairs.
Yeah.
That have the whole. I dig it.
Yeah.
Expensive. If I could work upside down, that'd be great.
Not upside down, but
on
your back,
just on your back. Yeah. Okay.
I have one of the inversion things that are supposed to be good for your back, and just made me sick to be upside down. I tried it.
Okay. Yeah. Now, again, gonna go down this road too. Did you follow instructions on that? Because I learned an important lesson on that, doing that the wrong way as I got older. When I was young, I used to do those things a lot.
Yeah.
But you're actually not supposed to go full upside down.
Yeah, no.
Okay. Yeah.
I couldn't even make it that far.
Okay.
That's where I figured out it's not for me.
Yeah that's fair.
I was like 40 degrees or something. Like I'm like this.
Yeah.
Like I'm probably really almost laying flat, but it felt like
just
I was
enough to like tip that scale.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And I put it together, so I could never really fully relax, you know?
Yeah.
There was no unit testing on the thing. I don't know, you know? Every time I deployed it, I thought that could be the end.
I'm pretty sure that sound got caught in this. That's
it's
fun.
Okay.
That's the that is the
We're
door
not
opening
here.
And closing.
Yeah.
I just want to say
that was Sarah.
Yeah. Saying her goodbye. She was like, and yeah. I've had enough of that.
Yeah.
So
one of them started talking about software again. I'm out of here.
So reminder for me.
Yeah.
We do introductions at the beginning of a podcast.
Did you know that? Do we?
Yeah,
like,
we are.
Like what kind?
Where we say our actual names.
Oh.
And so people can identify the voices that
oh,
go
yeah.
with those names.
Yeah. Yeah, so, we used to do that, huh?
Yeah, and we're supposed to. Again, we usually get caught up in trying to figure out what I did wrong on the board. So, but we are getting past that. We are good now. I'm Joseph. We've got Evan mm-hmm. with us. Hello.
Hello.
And Audrey.
Represent.
And also Alan.
Hello.
And possibly Casey. He
Maybe.
Is in the other room hammering on things.
Things. He's
like
he's...
people's mindsets and such. To make sure that you know we get everybody in the
he's
right
unclogging
form.
The toilet.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. That's a good. That's
oh
a. What was
my
a way
God.
Better? Evan's like, what direction have we gone on this podcast? I don't know anymore.
Yeah.
So, all right.
I'm getting back into the groove.
There, yeah.
You
that's
know,
right.
that's what it is. Yeah.
I came up with my own. I came up with a name this time and everything to give us at least a starting point, and you guys can. Overrule me for sure.
A name for this episode?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
At the beginning?
At the beginning.
It's in the, I know,
we've
right?
We've never done
no
that.
No formation.
I don't think we've ever done mm-hmm. that.
It's wild, but here's the thought.
Oh, man. I now sent, we got expectations to live up to.
I did send you guys just this morning. I was not, mm-hmm. I wasn't as proactive as I would have liked to have been. Has been a couple of, interesting couple of crazy weeks, so mm-hmm. I'm a little bit slow on my uptake, but... I thought we would talk about product management and engineering rebuttals, mm-hmm. or some people might use the word excuses.
Oh. This one should almost have a link back to, I forget whichever one it was, but it was the one I was telling you about.
Yeah.
Where, yeah. yeah, we did the Law and Order thing.
Yep, exactly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we spent like an hour on that one, just getting it writ out, I think.
Exactly. And I didn't write out much. I just put some of the ones that I have heard back and forth, as well as I did do some research. I checked some podcasts I checked some Google pages to see like, hey, what did other people say? And they did agree with some of these rebuttals. But the core of this is the communication, you know? Mm-hmm. And honestly, most of these rebuttals, we could talk about the empathetic side, you know, between the four of us, the other side of that. That would be so these are kind of miscommunication, and I thought it'd be fun to name it myth communication. Mm-hmm. Are these?
I like it. Yeah.
Are these?
I don't hate it. Yeah.
You know, okay. I'm glad. Yeah. You know, like again. Now I bet you guys could we could add some fire to it, but I like you know it's kind of my starting point. Again,
yeah,
I'm not saying this is where it goes. I just want to give us a starting point, and then I figure we will just rock and roll through. And I wanted you all to help me decide on whether we went through product management rebuttals, excuses first, or engineering rebuttals and excuses first. First, you all outnumber me, so I'm just going to let you guys make the decision. I would say I do represent a little bit more of the product management side.
Correct.
Yeah.
But
we could weave them together.
Oh, that's fun,
like
too.
Like a zipper effect.
And I literally couldn't come up with a fifth one for product management. So I did try to do five on each side and came up with a fifth one. So I was like, they'll have something, I'm sure.
I'll have something.
Yeah. So
I was going to say, it'll come up in conversation for sure.
It'll feel natural.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, yeah, you guys say we want to weave them back and forth. Mm-hmm. One
I like
and one.
The zipper.
One and one. All right. So then I kind of want to charge at the engineering one first. This is the main charge, right? Everyone knows it, and it's the big one. It works on my machine.
Oh yeah.
I'm not seeing that. Oh, that's my favorite.
Yeah.
My heart rate just went up a little bit.
That one even gives me anxiety.
Yeah.
Cause it's true. Everything does work on my machine most of the time. Not always. Like, I feel like the village idiot when that's happening.
Evan is literally shaking his head. I'm giving you a visual cue.
Because Evan never works on his own machine.
Exactly. That's what I was about to say. Evan's like,
so actually, nothing works on his machine. Everything works in the Gitpod machine somewhere. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, but yeah, that's, you know, I always think about that because, like, right here, I'm working on something and then devil's in the details with like environment variables, ports open, and things that. So, you know, to get to work on another machine is always in the back of my mind, and 70% of my anxiety probably the whole way through.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. That.
I just go, Andrew. Fix this.
I will say that is my biggest heartache as a product person when I get the it works on my machine. Oftentimes, because it's also followed up by. Did you clear your cache? Mm-hmm. And did you XYZ? Did you restart your machine? Which is the thing about it. The reason it's such a heartburn for me as a product person is the kind it feels like from a product perspective that the team doesn't recognize that as a product person, one of my biggest balances is the resources at my disposal, which are you as an engineer and your time. And I don't come to you before I do the things because that's a waste of the resources. That's one of the biggest things I'm supposed to be balancing as a product person. So when you say, did you clear your cache? It's a bit of a slap. Like, you clearly didn't even care enough to think about your project is what it feels like, right?
Well,
and I know that's not what you're trying to say. It's supposed to be support, right?
I was going to say, on the other side of that, not every product owner maybe I've ever potentially interfaced with is that way.
It's true.
And you might be surprised how often they have not cleared their cache and don't know what that is sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And
fair.
So, like, the other side of it is... Like, to be a bad product owner, you could look at the card, get to the done column, fire it up, doesn't do what I thought it does, and immediately reject it without any further thought, and then just go back to whatever you were doing. And then I just get a card back with no context, and I'm like, oh, what's so
that's
I thought I did this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought I did this. What's this, you know? So, you know, that, like, Joseph was a really great product owner.
I appreciate that.
Yes. I worked with you.
Long time.
Yeah. Mm. Not every product owner is made the same, Joseph.
That's true and fair, right? So, you know, there's some miscommunication going on there.
Yeah. But see, this is where we can correct it there.
That's the one I'm hoping for.
Yeah.
I wish, though, that we would think about the client-side cache a little bit more as developers, because we're not actually doing that. Like, we just depend on the fact that, like, we're going to deploy code. It's going to go up to AWS. Yeah. It's cache response. But why is the cache invalid? Why didn't we invalidate the cache?
Right.
So that you guaranteed you weren't going to get the wrong asset. Like, that's been the biggest factor for me has been, like, that's a failure on us. That's not even a failure on the user. Because we should be considering not just you, the PO, but the actual end user is going to have to clear their cache.
Right.
Yeah,
they don't
sense.
Know that either. Right. So why aren't we clearing cache ahead of them on deploy or their reentry into the app or having a stale warning in the app?
Because we're not perfect.
Yeah.
What? Alan, that beard is perfect. I assume the rest follows.
I bet there's some clever engineering to make ourselves perfect. I bet there's something we're missing.
I don't know. I think that also lies the imperfection of the thinking that there could be perfection.
I think there can be. I think there can.
That's lawful good versus chaotic good.
I'm like 90% sure that's a solved problem by somebody.
I think, and maybe what you're saying is the tolerance for imperfection could be lower, and or the expectation of perfection or maturity of the product could be higher. Yeah. And I think that's true, right? There's the issue. I remember one issue we had, first project we worked on.
I was thinking about another issue.
But I remember we were doing some work for an agricultural company. That
love those guys.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We do. I mean, you're wearing your John Deere hat today, in fact.
Yeah.
And those guys specifically, there may have been.
Well, they're great.
You know, there may have been maturity in our relationship that was forged in steel, and there was a problem that we were encountering with that application that had to do with cash, and we had to actually set it up to manually bust cash like every time.
Yeah,
every time a new module was added. I think of
cash like. It was, I mean, I guess it technically was. It was in the local storage in the browser.
Right. Yeah.
So through a slow, painful, steady evolution of changing opinion by a stakeholder, we ended up like making a navigation system that went into the top header there. And I don't remember the details, but I remember it was gnarly. It was like, you know, down to fields by crop type, by all these different things. And that was getting stored in local storage. And like at first was good because you just go to the thing and you see the last thing you saw, which is what they wanted.
Right.
But then they would start, you know, adding on to it of like, well, if I go here and then it's like that, then I want to see this and that and all that. And ooh, got crazy to where me and Austin spent like 2 days finally coming up with a way to bust the cache in between like. Yeah. So, like, what I learned from that is not to think of web applications as mobile applications by default.
Nope.
And so then you don't have to store everything in, like, local storage like that. You can store that information in a URL.
Right.
Simply like right. that. That could have just been query parameters to get them what they wanted on each request.
True.
But, yeah, you know, live and learn and things. Yeah.
So let's bounce to...
What's the next one?
Number one for product management excuse, right?
I'll try to.
Here's the one.
I tried to come in so hard on this
I
one.
I thought of as number one, so you guys tell me, but the client just told me XYZ.
This got my heart rate.
Oh, I got heartburn right away.
Okay.
Yeah. So tell me how you interpret that one. What's the frustration?
Oh, change request is what
change
I heard.
Change requests. I immediately go to scope.
Yeah.
And it seems it's always something. It's not just, well, the client told me to use this color instead of this color. Okay, that's one thing. Cool. Go in, change colors.
Change a hex, yeah.
Yeah, change a hex. No big deal. It's never that, though. It's never that.
Right.
It's, we would like a whole new page, workflow, blah, blah, blah. That's outside of your scope. Well, you can't tell me that. I'm the client.
Yeah.
Yep. And it's waving the client flag, and that's why there's a scope. That's why there are agreements, because that should be the helpful tool in the communication of here's what you asked for. Here's what we promised to deliver you based on these requirements. Changes go through this process. That process seems to get skipped in previous experience.
Right.
I have not experienced that here, but in previous experience.
Right. Well, that's where
we've
our
tried to
process...
get it to where we don't do that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
And that's where our process should be. That's where our process should be actually defining how that operates. And for us, it should be agile project management or agile methodology for whatever project management.
But
tools we're using. Right?
I agree. That's kind of the knee-jerk reaction to it, though. It's like what we initially hear by that.
Yeah.
Even Someone's if it's not to, that, that's right. You've heard it at least once before, and that's enough to cause that visceral reaction.
Exactly.
Like, whoa.
Are you circumventing the process here?
Yep. Yep.
You know, because that does happen. I try to recognize that when I'm a client on other stuff. If I have a builder working in my house, I try to remember those things too and not scope creep on them of like, well, while you're here, could you also do 4 hours worth of different work that we never talked about?
Yeah.
You know, I understand what that means. So try not to do that.
I think also of that, again, product side, my reaction, and sometimes product owners would tell me this when I was working with them as direct reports, and my response is, why didn't you say no? Right?
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the biggest jobs of a product owner is actually to say no, right? Depending on there are a
no
number
but
of reasons that you can say no. no, we're in the middle of a sprint. We could try to add that for the next sprint. Or, no, I don't think that's actually going to be valuable for the product, and I know that we haven't done any type of research on it. Let's at least talk that through and put it on a strategy plan rather than trying to implement it right now, right?
It's okay to push things a little bit. It doesn't have to be. I think sometimes people, and I probably fell into this trap when I was doing some product management, of you so badly want to please the client because they're your client and that's how the money's coming in. Mm-hmm. And that could be an immaturity thing. It could be, you know, just some naiveness. But once you learn that they're not looking always for a yes or no immediately, they just want a response that you care. And it's perfectly acceptable to say, let's get a discussion on the calendar.
Right.
I can't give you an answer right away because I need to know more for my team and for you, the client. We need to know more. So let's have a discussion. Let's do some research and some discovery. And that's, I think, ultimately the sought after answer or something to that effect.
Right.
But that's not how engineering side, you want to react of like, hold on. And then product owner is like, but they're the client. And it's doesn't have to be quite so knee-jerk.
Right, mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, I always like to use the word priority. Like, oh, that's great. We could prioritize that next sprint.
Exactly.
Like,
exactly.
Oh, you know, that's good.
I'm like, oh, I heard you, and I have a solution that won't derail this sprint.
That's right, exactly. Know? Right, because we have commitments.
Yeah.
That. And
if we did try to pivot mid-sprint, like, you're not going to get a full sprint. It's going to take time to pivot. Day or two at the very least. That's very optimistic. You know, they're going to lose time if we try to pivot that fast.
Mm-hmm. Right. And an example, again, a client just told me, legitimate example.
It happened again when you said that.
Yeah. We need to actually put one of these microphones up to your heart just to kind of monitor.
My heart.
The one on a project we're still working on, we had a clear definition from the client on how something was supposed to be implemented. It was in the sprint and we were working on it. During that same time, we had an independent track of doing interviews with some other people in his organization. Mm. And in that organization, his expectation was, this is how this other person does this. Mm. And we had the interview with that person mid-sprint, and that person was like, I do not do it that way. That will ruin my entire workflow. We can't, don't. This is actively in sprint, right? And then, but to know that this is literally going to give us not only no value, it'll be negative value to the product, but I just discovered it as a product owner. We had to come back and say to the engineers, okay, the client did just tell me, but the reason I'm telling you now is I'm not saying we need to pull this into the sprint, right? So the solution there was, I'm not saying we need to pull this into the sprint right now and change the cards you're working on. What I'm saying is we got to reprioritize the current cards so where this one goes to the bottom because it's just not right and we need to fix it in the next sprint. So there are legitimate reasons for that. And as well, I guess with each of these, I'm wanting to try to get both sides right, where there are legitimate reasons for it's not working on my machine. One of those might have been exactly what you were saying, Alan, right? Like, they didn't clear their cache. And sometimes that took me in the product management field about 3 months to really learn, where I was like, okay, I really do actually need to clear my cache. I really do. Mm. And I had to push pretty hard on it.
Yeah.
Like, well, do we really... Like, is it really supposed to be that bad? Does it really have to be cleared every time? Does it really have to be this? Does it really have to be that? And really diving into different caches and...
Right. Because it...
History.
The answer can be yes, especially if you're actively working on it. Like,
right.
So I can think of one of the worst scenarios that we had that, you know, it turned out fine, as they often do. But we had a product and we had a cache in the local storage... And it had, like, user data in there, nothing sensitive, but just to power the front end and store their filter settings and all that and everything. But something happened. It was probably a request or something. And we drastically changed the structure of that. So it broke the app when they went to log in the next time. They looked for a thing in the JSON and didn't find it and blew up. And the only way to fix it was to open up local storage in your browser and clear it. So we had to like basically send out an email to this guy to send out to his people on how to clear their cache like that. But sometimes you do run into that while you're in active development, you know. Mm-hmm. I still gripe sometimes when like, you know, the Fire Stick or something won't connect. And I think that I'm like, oh, they've changed their something.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's looking in the wrong place for something.
Oh, I was trying to, I was just working on something yesterday and I was like, I just need to find the way to just flush it. If I just flush the system, this will work. I know it will. I just can't get it to flush. And it, I don't know, something proprietary that just doesn't have information about how you do that. Mm. And it was like, wait, effectively the forms are like, wait 24 hours, it'll do it. And it's like, I can't wait 24 hours. Like, I want this. I need this working now. It was some piece of technology hardware, I don't know, drive or something. I don't know. And it was just like, I need it now. I was like, all right, I'll go buy another one. And I bought another one and reset it. And then waited and took it back. And it was like, that, I mean, that's the answer for immediate needs in that case. Yeah. All right. Let us move to... Let's see. Next one, bouncing back and forth. I didn't know it was a requirement. It's not on the card. I get that one from engineers sometimes. Say it.
Defend yourself.
Say what you want to say.
That's why we buy product management tools.
Yeah, it's true.
Put your notes in them. Sorry. Yeah. Not my fault.
Yep. No, that's fair. I didn't know it's a requirement / it's not on the card. I think... You know, there's multiple problems we could be talking about there. One of which is that it's actually is on the card, and
oh, that's funny.
You didn't read it.
Yeah. I love that one. That's funny. Yeah, that's the good one.
That's the one where I'm like, and I'm sorry. Oh, sorry, I missed that. It's like, okay. And the way we try to build inside this org specifically is the same thing you hear. You know, it's a pretty common blog post. Conversation card criteria, right? So, but the first piece is, and most important piece is the conversation. And so there is the portion of that that has to do with, as a product manager, it's my job to write it down on the card. That's the C, the criteria. Like, it's the last on the list, so it's not the most important. The conversation is definitely the most important. But also, that's very important, and that reflects on your job skill. did you record the criteria that you guys did talk about as a product manager? If you didn't, you've got some growth in your career, right? That's important. It is important to record that, even if you did have a conversation. Now, the reason that doesn't work, right, the reason you can't blame it all on that is because there is so much that goes into a conversation for building context around things and understanding of things that sometimes it's hard to boil that down into criteria, especially if you have an architecture spike around things and you built a whole card, what is epic out of it, you know, or something to that effect. But what you don't want to do is be trapping either side of that organization piece on there. Anyway.
The other side of that, though, is just async comms, right? So the idea that, like, spoken conversation
it's true.
Is information lost to a group generally because people aren't always there. Yep. But, like, if we're in a backlog refinement and we're setting the stage for what we're going to do in the sprint, we damn well better have the cards fleshed out by the end of the refinement.
Agreed.
And if we don't, they don't encompass what they need to, so don't do the work.
Right,
stay in backlog. But yeah, they have to be on the card. Like, and they can't be spoken. That's not enough. They can't be. Conversation has to be on physical media. It can't be.
Yeah.
What did I remember that person say it?
Oh, God, right. I hate that.
That's not good enough.
My memory is fallible.
Yeah.
Like, that literally is the medium of communication.
Completely agree. That's what I say. The most important being the conversation as in understanding agreement on it. And that's why it is a fail. That's where, if it's not on the card, it's a very clear indication of the party responsible for it not. For the criteria not being met. And that would be the product management side, right? It has to be on the card for that. Now, that's why when it is on the card, it's also a clear indicator of the party responsible, and that is on the engineer, right? And what you don't want is on either side of that equation, that thing becoming consistent. Because if that's consistent, that error is consistent, then it's somebody not growing and getting, as we say, 1% better every day, right?
I guess that's not one I use much, but I put my own criteria on the cards, though.
So. Oh, that's true. Yeah. You do.
Oh, 100%.
Which is fair.
I'll add my
own. It's fair.
It's hard for me to blame myself.
You might be working through the feature and be like, I don't think this makes sense.
Yeah.
What if we did this?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the things I like about Linear now is that it really makes that
it
easy.
It holds it together for us.
Yeah. Really makes it easy to add sub-issues and, and they become cards right away. We were using something else that didn't do that. I don't remember what it was. But you can make sub-issues and they just got buried into nothing.
Yeah.
Pivotal.
Pivotal. That's what it was. Yeah. It was Pivotal.
Pivotal
it
did not
just
have
made
a
you a checkbox. Yeah.
That's right. That's all it had.
Even just having a place to have like some quick async conversations, like if there's any clarification Slack. You need on points, you can have those in Slack. Sometimes those get lost depending. So to have that right underneath the card is, you know, here's the card with the requirements. Here's what I asked. Here's what product owner said back. There's, you know, a source of truth for you. You can go back to that, add your own notes to it. That has come in handy multiple times.
Yeah, and the other thing about conversation, I want to clarify as well. My little defensive product manager coming out. But honestly, is that what you said, which is you're working through a feature and you say this doesn't make sense. The conversation is not just the first conversation. It's the fact that there's an active conversation going through the life cycle. Correct. Now, the other thing I'm going to throw out here about that, I didn't know it was a requirement. It's not on the card. This is the one that Casey likes to use a lot. And I will again use an example. There was a field. It's not the field boundary that you've been on recently, but a different field boundary and field product we were working on in the agriculture space, and had to do with some field collection data. And we had built this feature out, and it did exactly what was on the card, 100%. Also, when you clicked a button, it gave you a 404 error. And the response we got was, well, it's exactly what's in there. And it's like, it also gives you a 404. Like that also doesn't
that wasn't on the card.
Like, right. Like I know it
must
doesn't
include 404.
Right. Always returns a 404.
But that was the thing, right? They were like, well, but it doesn't say not to give, and it's like nope. Also that engineer doesn't work here anymore. But the point is that that's the thing, right? Like there's no way, in the same way that it took me as a product person a long time to understand that there is no way for you to catch every exception. That was the ghost that when the air comes on, pops the door
does
open.
A whoosh thing.
Yeah. but at the same time, it took me a long time to figure out that why an engineer can't code or build tests around every exception error that could occur. In the same way, I can't write a card that tells you everything it shouldn't cause an error.
The negatives.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
There's a, oh my God.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have to talk about this a lot with my engineers who are very worried about it, which is happy path and sad path testing. Oh my God. Yeah. Oh, it's exhausting. I can't stand it. I have no answer for anybody sometimes when it comes to that stuff because it's just, there's so much there.
Yeah.
Of like sad path testing is literally, it could be millions of tests.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like, you just literally cannot write them all.
Right.
You wouldn't be able to. And so you get into property-based testing and fuzzing, but nobody's, we largely just code the happy path, right?
Nice.
And that's fine. We walk away. But we can get into doing property-based testing and all that kind of stuff and fuzzing, but it's a little aggressive.
You
it's not necessarily
need
the right choice.
To drop some links for me for show notes. For
oh, God. Oh, no.
Something.
Property, contract, designed by contract.
Good or... Lord. Or I'm assuming you didn't make up happy path testing.
Well, maybe no, of course not. I mean it's foundational knowledge of category theory and covariance and contravariant programs. It's all like I gave a talk at Fayette Pi on contract based testing. Gotcha. So there's a lot in there that already talks about it that I could just send you.
Okay, great. But, we'll just drop it in the show notes for yeah. people. Great. All right. That was a fun one. Back to, man, these are fun, and we are not getting
near as much progress. We're only two through each.
I know, yeah. I hadn't even thought. I thought that, like, I don't know if five is enough. Well, clearly it is.
It is. We've got things to say.
Gosh, this is one of my favorites. Again, so I'm the defensive for product management, but also I did have direct reports that are product owners, and so I also have some experience around, like, I'm sorry, what did you just say to me? So a little bit of unity with you all. I'll have to ask the client. I need to look into that. That kind of rebuttal. Look, I get that, but one of the main jobs you have as the product owner is to own the product. You should know. Now, there are some times when it's like you're asking something about the feature that they just don't know, right? But there are so many times that I see wavering or indecisiveness that I'm like, hey, look, it's literally your job to know. And if that answer is very low stakes to give clarity on, you can give a soft clarity, right? Which is, let's do it this way. I'm pretty sure that's the right way because I'm familiar with the product, because I'm familiar with the client. But this rebuttal around, like, oh, I'll just have to ask the client. And really what the truth is that what I'm talking about there is like an abdication of responsibility to the client. Then as a product owner, you're not really being a product owner. You're being a glorified card pusher. And that's not what we want for product owners. So that rebuttal itself, that one actually gets under my skin a little bit. That's one of the reasons that I
Yeah, that's good. Because, like, you know, like you said, our job is to kind of know things. You know, we're kind of like Tyrion Lannister, I guess.
Oh, yikes.
But
it's fair.
Yeah. But, you know, the other danger in, like, if you are going to go back to the client and ask them about certain details, you know, they're going to get bogged down in indecision fatigue.
Yeah.
Like, you know, that's my builder coming to me talking about angles and things and rafters and stuff. After a while, I just glaze over. Decision. And
it's okay to take good? Some autonomy. And,
yeah, do the good thing then.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, yeah. So
it can quickly spin out of control otherwise.
Yeah. Yeah. So now, yeah, exactly. There'd be time of like, I don't know. Let me check a thing. Let me ask someone.
Yeah.
Designed by committee. Then you fall into that. That's.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So a lot of ownership, I think, needs to be taken there. So obviously not one that got under you all's skin as much. Good to know. Mm. So bouncing back, hey, we'll move forward quick then. Another good one, engineering side. Oh, that's a known bug or that's a known issue. Mm. And I know that sometimes is bothersome.
The immediate response should be, is there a card for that?
I think
because if it's a known bug and there wasn't a card, even the dev could have made it.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, it's easy enough to jump in.
POCs aren't the only ones entitled to make issues. like if you notice something while you're working,
just
add it,
drop it. Right,
it's
exactly.
Tech debt, log it.
Yeah, I don't. That's job security.
I mean, yeah,
you know, to an extent, right?
No, exactly. I mean, right.
If you run out of things to do, what are you going to do?
Or maybe you introduce something new and two things are clashing.
Yeah,
in a way you didn't anticipate.
Right.
Yep.
Fine. Right. Bug. Go.
Yeah. Yep. I can still do the thing I want to do, but it kind of messes this other thing up. Card. I'll fix that later. I got them what they want right now.
That's
right.
Yeah, it's there. It's tracked. It's logged.
Yeah.
You get to it when it fits into your flow.
Yep.
And is appropriate to take care of. But it's easy enough. It takes, a minute to go type that in?
Yeah. Really not that hard. Yeah. There's like keyboard shortcuts and everything. They make it easy.
It's even quicker to forget it if you don't do it.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
If you don't note that down and it comes back up, that's when you're
comes
in
back
deep
up
water.
In a demo.
And somebody else brings it up. And from a demo, you're like, I was aware of that.
Yeah, that's the thing I hate. Mm-hmm. Going into any kind of a meeting or demo or anything and not knowing. Like, that's my thing. I do not like to not know.
Right.
An answer, at least. Even, you know, even if that's, I'll find that out and get back to you.
Yeah. Even if the bug persists in the demo, if you know it was there and you can clearly explain, yeah, we've logged it, here's the steps we're going to take to remedy it, it's just a conflict of the new feature. Like, it doesn't, you know, it's whatever at that point, devil's in the details, but at least you have the confidence and you're not surprised when you're giving a presentation. You're like, so it wasn't supposed to do that. That shouldn't be the case ever.
Yeah, because if I don't know how exactly it works, and you're the expert, and I'm trusting you to do it. Now, if you don't know, I sure as heck don't know exactly. Yeah, you've lost trust, yeah.
So over on one of our projects with Will, we've had that happen, where we've gone not to demo, but just like using the app the next day, or maybe in front of like us, and he goes and has a user experience, and it's slow.
Yeah.
My immediate response, the first thing I do is while he's going through the call, I log into Honeycomb. I find the exact trace and session he's working with, and I say, oh, took 8 seconds.
Yep.
Here's the trace. Dump it in a card.
Exactly.
And somebody can go look at the trace later and figure out, oh, I can eliminate these steps and make that same thing faster.
Right. Right.
Don't have to do anything. The card's just as simple as slow.
Yep.
Go here.
Yeah.
Look for more.
Right. Exactly. Find and that, gold. That's where people get... That's where this process can get off track when there's too much that might go into trying to document, right? And and that is literally part of the Agile core tenets, right? Like that working software over
documentation.
What's the word? There's an adjective in front of documentation, isn't there?
Yeah.
It's something like now I feel like an agile loser.
You don't have the manifesto memorized,
in my
Joseph.
Brain right now. I know, right? Okay, but you know what I have been doing is a good job of not using as many ums or stuttering in this podcast.
Hey, that's good. That's
this is good progress for me over here.
Yeah, yeah. It just takes practice.
That's right, and forgetting some agile tenets. All right, known issue.
Well, that's where you stored your new skills.
That's exactly. Took that part out, and
it's a conversion that happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. Over to the product management side. We kind of discussed this one already on the last one, which is, I just didn't get that one into the card. I didn't get that into the card.
Mm.
And yep, exactly.
I everyone, didn't get it into the software.
Everyone here made like the same thing. I mean, just shakes his head slowly. Audrey's over here just putting her hands up. Well, okay. Sucks for you, I guess.
Yeah.
That one bothers me.
That's where going to kind of the empathy side, it's like, I don't think I have empathy for you in this moment because... Yeah. I put my card in with the details, and I didn't even have to do that.
Yeah.
That's your job.
That's your job. Exactly. No, that's one that is very foundational, right, to me. There's a lot of complexity. There really is a lot of complexity in building software, right? That's what we know. That's what we do. We build custom software. And the... complex stuff takes long and is difficult, and you have to explain it in detail, and you have to help people understand why it's so hard and complex. The simple stuff, you just get right. Or you just don't.
Yeah.
Right? Or you just don't build custom software, right? And so the simple stuff, like putting it on the card, that you got to do it. You got to do it. Just that's literally just skill set change. I was thinking about it when we were talking about like the known issue in just a second ago, but we had one project where we were doing some stuff with groundwater, and there was a issue that we had where the issue was not actually an issue. It was because of the fake data we put in. There you go. That's the word I was looking for, right? And it was causing an effect that's not going to be there anytime there's real data in there, right? But as the product side, we'd put fake data in to demonstrate something. And then that fake data was causing conflicting problems, I guess, somewhere on the back end, and it was causing either a loop or it's causing something to drop, or and you wouldn't get to the page, and it was this whole thing. And that came out of actually my mouth as product owner. Was like, well, it's a known issue. And that did not work well for the client, right? Because it was this situation. And what the reason I'm relating it here is that they actually asked that question about, well, how are we going to get to it? When are we going to get to it? And it was, it ended up being this situation where I was just like, well, I haven't written a card for it. So, oh, I didn't get it on the card. I haven't written it on a card yet. And that was like, well, I think it's a big client's kind of, I think it's kind of a big priority that would, you know, try to demo this and it doesn't break. It's like, yeah, you're right. Let's get a card on that right now in the middle of this demo, because we're not going to go any further without that card, right? That's the foundational stuff. You got to get that part right, because the complexity part, putting the wrong data in that causes it to divide by a zero and break the app, that, you know, is not, is something that somebody smarter than me has to figure out and fix. So let me get the foundational stuff right.
Pretty easy. It's if denominator zero, walk away.
I mean, fair enough. Fair enough.
Bro, I tell you, safe divide. Oh my Lord.
Yeah.
Oh, what? So little safe divide usage. It's so, it's such an easy lint for people. If you ever notice something being divided in any application,
always
just look at that denominator and be like, what if that's zero? And you immediately should be getting responses from everybody of like, oh yeah, I should check for that. It's like, yes, you should. Like, you should have an answer for safe divide. Or you should override the division built in Python and make it actually do the right thing. I don't know, but figure it out, because it's like, that is, it's such a foundational problem.
It's so funny to me that this just reminded me of this, and I'm also funny that I'm going to now take us off track, but you said Python. I hadn't thought about Python since before we got into our discussion here. And everybody's seen all the, you know, Threads released, or Threads released. And it's built on the same backend as Instagram.
Well, which Instagram used to be a Django backend long, long time.
Really?
Yeah.
They are a big Python shop.
That's supposed to say they're Python, right?
Yeah, they did a big 2-3 migration as well, too. They have a great talk on that when they went from 2-3.
Yeah.
But yeah, they're a huge...
Another listener note right there. Yeah. Evan, you're coming up with a listener note.
Yeah. I know.
Come on, Evan.
Like the Instagram desktop, like if you went there in your browser, that was a Django app.
Really?
For a long time.
Cool. I didn't know that.
Photos, too. Photos and everything in Django. I mean, you think about what Instagram is, like... They had it figured out, and
interesting. So
not everything's Ruby on Rails. Go figure.
I know, right?
How nice.
I know so little. I mean, not so little. I say that, but I actually don't know so little about engineering. But I'm not an engineer for sure. And I was helping people with web apps back in some WordPress and Drupal days, and somebody had built something Ruby on Rails, and I swear, my mind exploded, and I just, like, I was, like, so done. It was the one time I've ever, like, looked at something that's like, oh, that's really different. I usually think, that's really different. I want to know a little more about it. And I was like, that's really different. I want to burn it, and I don't ever want to know about that again. And I don't, that's probably not the right response, but that's the way I felt about that. I was like, I'm done. This is bad. I don't like it. It could have also been bad implementation. I don't know. But I don't like.
I mean, it's the convention issue. Yeah, that's what most people have a problem with. Rails.
And yeah. That's the one that always gets me. But like, if you're coming from WordPress into Rails, like, that's a whole different world of even how it renders the thing to the web. Yeah,
right.
Yeah. I get that.
There was much confusion in the world for me.
As Django folks, we do kind of push back on, like, so Rails is, you know, batteries included, and also
heavily convention
over configuration.
Oh my God, heavily convention.
So it's just, oh, you just do it this way and it just works. But if you're new and you don't know that, and you haven't been around the whole time, you don't know just to do it that way and it just works. So like Django, it's with a Python mindset, is very much get in here and configure it how you want it. Oh, it doesn't do what you want? Make it do what you want.
You can unwind the abstraction in Django, in Python. And that's the important thing, I think, of them over Ruby, is the convention notion of Rails makes it extremely hard to unwind the convention. Yeah. And people do not like you when you unwind the convention. They really do not like you. Yeah. So, like, yeah, it's not developer friendly to me.
Yeah, some of it's the Ruby language itself that facilitates some of that bad behavior. And I get some of that from Oscar, who we've had on this podcast before. Mm. The guy developing Grain, his own language. Yeah, mm-hmm. So he has strong opinions about Ruby that we were talking about Rails one time, and he was like, well, of course, comes from a terrible language. What would you expect? You know, just allows you to do terrible things. So, like, I see you wondering, like, there's a million examples, but, like, you know, I can't think of one off the top of my head. I know there's something that somebody else, though, explained to me one time, who was a Rails guy, about this. There's a thing in Ruby that will, like, it's like it has space for a potential thing, mm-hmm. even if it's not a thing, and that's what Rails takes heavy advantage of, that, like, Django couldn't even work that way if it wanted to in some ways. But you could argue
Django does. It buries it in classes, though.
Yeah.
I think inheritance is a massive source of issues for Django.
Yeah.
Because there is convention in inheritance that...
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You do need to unwind occasionally. You do need to actually differ from
convention. I think a big one in there, too, is, like, if you've just been doing Django REST framework, some of the view sets won't make sense if you've never done form sets.
Correct.
In old school Django.
Correct.
Because then it just makes sense.
Yeah.
That,
you know.
But, yeah. There's tiny bit of convention in
convention
there.
Convention. Yeah. Got
but,
it.
But yeah, not as much as like what Ruby will let you do with stuff.
Okay. Now, after that sidetrack to the Ruby confusion of my life and whatever else the sidetrack was. Oh, just in general, Python and Threads. And I didn't know that. I never knew that about Instagram. And then I was just like, oh, I wonder what. Because you got Facebook owns Instagram.
Purchased.
Now, right.
Let's
purchased and so now owns.
And integrated.
And then, but everybody talks about Haskell for Facebook, right? Is that?
Haskell is used at Facebook, but it is not the predominant language used to render Facebook as you know it.
Right.
Okay.
Correct.
See, so that's what that's.
No, there's a contingent of Haskell developers that support Facebook in different.
Okay.
Different means that aren't the primary website.
Right, which makes sense. I've not actually ever done any kind of a dive into it. It's just literally what I hear talk about, but it makes sense that there would be a whole bunch of different stuff for rendering.
It's supporting. Yeah.
I
mean, there's some really good, man, Haskell. Ooh, that's I can go there, but.
Yeah.
Let's not.
Okay, fair.
That'll be a whole.
Appreciative.
Let's get to another question.
Let's go to the next. Well, okay, next rebuttal here. One of my favorites. That's an easy fix.
Mm. I almost feel like I jinx myself every time I say that. I've pretty much wiped that from my vocabulary.
That's...
Even if it is an easy fix, I keep it to myself.
Yeah, don't say it.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't just get anyone's hopes up.
And then they'll be like, wow, that was quick.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. I think that's the thing from the product side is that you may even only have like a 10% to 90% where 90% it is actually easy and only the 10% that it's not. But from a product side, it always feels like, well, every time you say that, it's a really hard fix, right? Mm-hmm. Because that's what people hate, right? People have so much loss aversion in their life. This is the nature of even like when you read marketing books, they talk about, you know, you want to give people the incentive that that keeps them staunchly in their loss aversion rather than winning, you know, the lottery. Mm-hmm. That's what they prefer. And so even as a product owner, you're going, that loss aversion gets very eaten up on those 10% when it wasn't easy, when you expected it to be easy because you were told like, oh, that's an easy fix, right? But also I think that when that type of a conversation happens, it's pretty regular that it's a pretty regular occurrence that conversation happens when someone is trying to discuss something where there's been miscommunication about criteria. Mm. And so the criteria is something like, and does this thing. And the engineer's like, oh, that's an easy fix. I can do that. Mm. But really, this thing is one of the bullet points on a 5-bullet point criteria, but it probably means a lot more. Mm. And might need its own sub bullet points, right? A lot more criteria to it. And it's probably actually warrants, I think probably most time that there's a, that's an easy fix, the conversation most of the time warrants a deeper conversation. Mm-hmm. Tell me why. Mm-hmm. Tell me why that's an easy fix. Or how about, tell me why you're calling that out. I see it's on the card and I see it doesn't do it exactly that way, but make sure I understand what you want out of that piece of criteria, because I think it's easy fix.
That's when I drag the product owner along and have them look at some code with me.
It's true.
Yeah.
True.
I was going to say, I think I recognize some Joseph coaching in some folks.
Yeah, it's true.
I do. I love it, because like, I'll just sit there and say classes and functions and objects and all these random things to you.
Yep.
But if I can just come in and go, no, look, see this line? I just need to move this over here and replace that with that. And then you understand what I understand.
Yeah,
sort of, maybe.
Well, at least get the abstraction. Yes. That understands the 10,000-foot view, right?
Yeah.
And that's really valuable for our team. Mm-hmm. I know that our product owners specifically always are wanting to know a little bit more about the technical, right? Mm-hmm. Because that's integral to the product development itself.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And as an agency, we don't ever have the exact same two projects at the same time.
Right.
If we did, there would be some problems with competition within the company, right? We can't do that. So we always have a little bit different approach on this, even the very, similar projects, because we are very often working in agriculture and field collection and boundary work and water work and just number of things, right? Construction and the AEC industry, those things. And so they are very similar, but they always have a slightly different angle, right? And that's why they want to know the technical and where it's useful. All right. Like I said, I only came up with 4 for product management side. You guys get to fill in the blank on number 5. But the 4th one I had was, and this one I think is pretty common. That's just the way the blank wants it. That's just the way the CEO likes it, or that's just the way in our company, CEO might not be the person to fill that role, but that's the way so and so wants it, we'll say that, or that's the way the client wants it. And as an engineer, I know that's got to be infuriating, especially in the times when it's like, that actually doesn't solve the problem, or
what if
it doesn't.
That's wrong?
It's just wrong. Evan is shaking his head no, so tell me, what's the thought here?
It's happened to me many times where it's come down to, we've developed functionality that the client desired for their users, and we get feedback from the users of, I wish I just had my Excel sheet or my PDF and walked away.
It's true.
That's a hard one to take.
But
you do it. I mean, you just,
it's
buckle
true.
Up and cater to your users. I don't have an answer for it.
Yeah. Well, and there's
that's how they are. That's how they are.
There's a question there about
misaligned development needs.
Yes. And also, in my mind, about the speed of technology transformation.
Oh, yeah. For sure.
What we might be doing, not only educating the individual client, but
even users broadly as a demographic, what they can do.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Users broadly and just, even globally what we are doing in technology transformation as a globe. And so sometimes it's...
They're right on the money.
It's just what you got to do.
Yeah.
You got to say, hey, do this. Also, I've built this thing that produces the Excel app that has a dashboard. Maybe once you start identifying some of these trends and you see that there are the same trends that are on your dashboard, you start to not be as resistant to it, right? It's just meeting people where they're at. Same way with raising children, right? You got kids that just brains aren't formed for 20 plus years. So for 20 years, you're going, well, I'll meet you where you're at. I'll help you a little bit.
I'm personally devastated by it. With like, I'm worried about my kids in particular, because I know there's a whole generation of kids that are not going to grow up knowing how to operate a keyboard and mouse.
Mm. Yeah.
They literally only know a touch screen and whatever app has been pre-programmed easily for them to use.
Right.
Like, they have been catered to so heavily.
Right.
That's I get the granddaughter in Vim sometimes to write some stuff out. Yeah, no, I do. She loves it. That's the thing.
Are you kidding me?
She just wants to make stuff on the screen.
That's true.
So I could do that notepad, but instead I'm like, hey, yeah, check this out.
Why don't you learn a modal text editor while you're at it?
That's what I'm doing.
Yeah.
I mean, she doesn't, you know, I bring it up for it, everything. But that's my thinking on it, because, like,
I have to remind
her. She's like five, and she could show me how to work stuff on a mobile device and screen swiping and all this.
But here's the thing. When's the last time you saw that mobile app developed on that device with those means?
Exactly.
It wasn't. It was developed by someone at a computer with a keyboard and mouse.
Yeah.
Like, there's an entire generation whose skills are not suited.
Yeah, they're going to be unprepared because
it's
not...
To the needs of what we have. And and there's talk of this, of like, there's a generational divide where it's people much older than me beyond Gen X and people much younger than me beyond Gen Z. They just don't have this, like, glory decades of mouse, computer...
Mm.
Programming, own your own software, be able to do your own things. Mm-hmm. Background, it's gone.
Yeah,
like, interesting.
Just they just don't
look at
have
like
it.
You know, Gen X kind of generation, like where we're at.
Got
like
some.
They went, you know, here's this computer thing
attached to the monitor,
and here's some
68K
here's some things
RAM.
You put in here. I don't know, you know, and so it was pretty much up to us to figure out how to run Oregon Trail if we wanted to run Oregon Trail.
Yeah.
You know, and that's a lot of, like, for them, it's just, oh, I just mash button because things screaming at me in the face to buy it anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
yeah.
Like, yeah.
That's I wouldn't have thought about that. That's an interesting leap.
It's going to be weird, man.
With me, but that's their everything they know. Even things like, I mean, growing up, VHS. You had buttons to press if you wanted to watch said movie.
There may not have been
record.
A remote at all.
Right.
Right.
You're having to configure everything right there. If you want to watch local network channels that are available, you're turning a dial and seeing what you can find. And even that's gone. We have remotes, but now those remotes can be on your little touchscreen box.
Yeah.
And then when you encounter that, it's like, what is all of this?
Yeah.
So that's going to be interesting.
I'm guilty
to watch.
Of it now, too. I get a remote and I'm like, where's the input button? And I can't find the input button. I throw the remote. I'm done. Can't find it.
I've been there quite a few times. I don't even want a computer on this. I just want it to be a TV. Why is it Netflix? No.
I just have a TV.
Yeah.
Yeah. But no, that's a valid point, right? That's wild. That's an interesting
it worries
consideration.
Me, man.
I mean,
we already know we're in a huge blue collar recession in terms of like people who are capable of actually building houses, plumbing toilets, running wire through homes. Like we've already got that issue.
Right.
Now we're gonna have a group of people who these fancy things that we've adopted, they won't even be able to maintain them.
Yeah.
Right.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Dark age.
Man, I've got to go find some opinion articles on that.
Oh, there's plenty.
At what point is it still innovation versus a dark age?
Right.
It's like these do and control and build so much
of the technology we use.
They use. They wouldn't be able to do what they do if it weren't for this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what's going to happen?
It will go into a dark age and then another iron age on the other side of it. That's you know, so I was watching, just tangent time, I was watching a documentary the other day that made me have this thought, and that's why all this is tied into it. I thought, whoa, we're in the information age, so if we lose information, that's it. That's the end of this age. And so, like, what happened to end the Bronze Age? There's debate, and of course no one knows. No one's around back then. But, like, you know, we used to think that maybe it was folks that were making weapons out of iron who it was a better technology, and so they just came in and took what they wanted.
Right.
But that's not really what the evidence looks like. It looks like, you know, to make bronze and why it became so popular is because you don't have to get it as hot as you do iron.
Yep.
And so it's easier to make places. You have to have copper and you have to have tin. copper's not that hard to get. No. Tin's,
tin's very hard to get. Yeah.
Yeah. So actually what ended the Bronze Age was it was like hard to get tin.
Mm.
And because they were all settled around the Mediterranean, you had Egypt, Mesopotamia, the Greeks, the Hittites. And so there was this massive trade route hub just going on in there. And after, you know, the bronze demand died down, then now you got a bunch of pirates and stuff in that area.
Yep.
And it just imploded on itself.
Since we're talking the past ages, have you listened to Fall of Civilizations podcast?
Uh-uh.
Oh, yeah. I've just seen you the one on the 13th century.
Ooh. Do it. Yeah.
It's I love excellent.
History, man.
This one's, I like it. The guy's very interesting. Mm-hmm. I think I support one person on Patreon. I'm not a big Patreon person. But I like the idea. Anyway, he is very close to becoming the second person that I submit on Patreon because I really like this podcast. I mean, they're like 2 hours long, and every one of them is about a fall of an entire civilization.
Oh, man.
Nice.
Yeah.
And so also, I binged... I had a friend recommend it to me, and he said, I binged like four of them, and he's like, they're 2 hours long. I'm like, I don't have time for that. And then I binged four of them as soon as I listened to it. And also, I was depressed for the next week. Mm. So
yeah.
I learned.
Gotcha.
Got to be a little cautious here.
Okay. I won't go head first into it. Yeah.
I'll share with you specifically the one on that.
Yeah, that'd be great.
13th century BC. Bronze to Iron Age, mass die off that we don't know about, right?
Right.
But that one's fun.
Neat.
And then I talked so long that I lost my screen and I don't know the next point.
He's got to log in.
Yeah. Pompeii is another interesting one. Speaking of history, like what fascinates me about Pompeii? A couple of things. Like one is, you know, we've all seen the cast field. Corpses, I guess, for lack of a better
name. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And so back then, they made up stories for some of them. There's this famous one where like eight of them died in a cellar together.
Yep.
So they made the story that they were a family and all this and everything. Complete BS.
Right, right.
They just eight randos who tried to find cover.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, right.
Exactly. You know, but understanding that they told that story to get funding for the thing so they could dig more and stuff, you know, because at first I was like, what? And then was like, oh, well, yeah, it was like the 1920s. I get it, you know. But you know, there would be graffiti and stuff on the walls. That's what blew my mind.
Yeah.
It's like in Roman times, we were just the same people.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. That's right. It's like people are people or something.
Yeah. Right.
Okay. Number five.
There we go. Five. Yeah. Just the time for him to get it back up. Here we go.
Engineering rebuttals. You know, a good one we hear. I haven't changed anything that would make that happen.
Mm.
It's like, cool.
It's happening.
I'm happy. But like the proof is in the pudding, as it were.
Me neither.
So there's a very legitimate reason for this one, though, I'll say. Like, so doing hardware for a while and doing electrical engineering in particular, like controls engineering, where it's like, no, this PLC code has not changed.
Right.
You have a failing sensor
right.
or a piece of hardware somewhere else on the line that you do not need me.
Yeah.
You need a maintenance man.
Right.
If you call me to fix your failing sensor, I'm now going to re-engineer the entire system around a simple mechanical failure.
Right.
Right.
That's bad.
No, it's true, right?
That's legitimate.
Yeah. I think I'm glad you bring up hardware, right? Because same thing happened. What did I? Oh, hardware. My air conditioner the other day.
Oh, okay.
So like... And this happens to me all the time. I do router stuff for friends all of the time, right? And they'll be like, hey, something doesn't work with my password or whatever. And I'll come in and I'll reset the password and I'm fine. And then like a week later, their router dies. And they're like, well...
They're correlating.
They're like, quote, it's because you... I was like, no, there may be some correlation there about like maybe... The password stopped working because something got reset because it was going dead or something. I don't know, but like, it's not because I reset the password. Like,
but
that's not true, right? But and then my air conditioner, you know, you guys have all heard my house is fun, and I've done a lot of stuff on it. Well, my air conditioner had this problem that had happened for a couple of years where it was leaking some water, and so I was going to fix it. You know, me fixing things is a bad idea because I get out the angle grinder and I cut into the AC and I like did all this stuff, got it like pretty much fixed, and then it worked great for a day. And I was like, yes, like I angle grinded into that stinker and I like got the pan fixed and I had the water going the right way. And it's like, yes. And that night it started to freeze up. And I was like, oh no, I've done ruined my air conditioner. So then I had to call in people and get quotes for a new air conditioner. But the first guy that came in and looked at it, he was like, ah, you didn't do too bad of a job. I was like, oh, but it's freezing. And he's like, yeah, you're just low on Freon.
Yeah,
right. You're just low on coolant. And I was like, but I ripped stuff apart and did. He's like, yeah, me. You did all fine right. By me. Did fine. But
that field in particular.
Yeah, I know, right? For
real. Yeah.
And it's this idea where, like, do you...
There's pros, again, and then there's people who are ripping it up like you. So that's probably why he said, yeah, not too bad.
Not too bad.
One of his guys on his team. Yeah,
exactly.
And he knows who he is, and he's like, I'm glad I didn't bring him out here first.
Yeah, right, for real. So, but it's just that whole idea, right? Do you want to re-engineer the whole system around...
Like not having
something
one sensor
that's not, or just low on coolant, right? Like, I'm like over here trying to do this
completely
whole thing.
Completely wrong,
like
failure mode.
Completely wrong, right? Yeah. Exactly. And so it does make sense. And again, I'm glad you mentioned the empathetic piece
there
of
is context.
Like,
it is however,
context for which it is.
However, I'm guilty as charged.
Right.
I've said this before.
Right.
And it was something I did.
Yeah.
Oopsie poopsie.
Yes.
Right.
Then you got to own your mistake and you fix it.
Yeah. Right. That's kind of the interesting side of it, though, is like with software and continuous integration, continuous deployment, it's so easy to get change in as a developer.
Yeah.
And so you are changing a system a lot.
Yeah.
So to say your change didn't cause it, you are lying a little bit.
Yeah.
Because like you're changing the system in a 2-week sprint a lot.
Right.
It could just be an ignorance thing. If you're not aware of every step along the way to get that change deployed, okay, that's not the. You shouldn't just be so quick to say that, though. Do some investigative. That's call an Andrew and see where in this can we pull up some logs? Can we see where in that process something went wrong? Because then that could be an issue with that particular step. You know, talking about sensors, it's a failing sensor. Or it could be something that you pushed up and it could point you back down to where in the code that problem arose.
Yep. Great.
And our favorite friend, Git Blame. Love me some Git.
Humbling.
Love me some Git. It's great.
That's awesome. All right, so that's all five I had on the engineering side. There's still the blank for product side. What do you guys? What are the rebuttals you hear from product management that you're like, that one boils my blood? Maybe not that. We never get that.
It's mostly the report one. Yeah, I know that's the one where it's like, they just want a PDF report. That's the one that.
Yeah.
I'm like, the client came to you in your face and told you your app sucked.
Yeah.
And they want a report.
And
the response you came to me
and
with.
And your reaction was, let's give them that rather than let's...
let's figure out how to make the app better.
Yeah. Fair. That's fair. Okay.
I've got one.
Okay.
We told the client we could do it.
Oh.
I've gotten that one.
Without consultation.
Without a discovery, without a discussion.
Yeah.
But we told the client we could do it. We moved the deadline up because we told the client we could do it.
Right.
That makes me want to burn buildings.
Yeah.
Fair.
Yeah,
and not commit arson. That was
no.
If your house falls apart like
just
mine,
the makeshift
we might actually commit arson.
Right, we might actually.
Nope. Now my house burns and I'm going to get in trouble because of what I said on podcast. Not true. Just joking.
It's not true. He doesn't want to burn his house down.
That's right. I love my.
But yeah,
I love
one,
my chickens.
That one
down.
Gets me going.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Any other angry, hateful things you can think
of? No.
No, you're one of the least angry, hateful people I know. So I know it's just hard for you to even come up with the
it is. Like I was going to say, I think I used it all on that one intro.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
You don't have one for POs, but for data scientists.
Oh, well, no, I love them. They're great. They might listen.
Tell me about virtual environments.
Oh man,
yeah. No, they're good.
We're
like
not going there.
It's funny though that like I sit around in a lot of conversations, especially with Evan and stuff that he and his folks are working on, and then like problems I'm encountering. I'm like, oh, I showed the guys GitFlow the other day. They thought that was neat. You know, we're all, yeah. You know, and then I'm in our back end, like, you know.
Let's, standards review.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's where I feel bad in there sometimes, too, that y'all are talking about some real advanced stuff. That I'm all like, oh,
it's
God.
It's not advanced.
If I show this to these guys, they'll.
I think that's inverse. I think it's the simpler stuff. Well, web dev is not bad.
You know,
the data science stuff is.
Yeah.
It's that orthogonal, non-web flow.
Yeah.
Long running task. Ugh.
Yeah.
Ugh.
It's just a different paradigm, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's a part of it that, you know, there's MLOps, and we've made fun of that a few times on here.
Funny enough.
Yeah. It's a dumb sounding word. I'll say it every time. But, you know, I think there is a need for it, but I think there's also a need to educate.
Oh, yeah.
You know, data science on. Like some software practices. Now, not, you know, you shouldn't, your data scientists can't be software engineers,
no.
And your software engineers mm-hmm. can't be data scientists. So there's definitely separations of concern, but there's a little bit of overlap these days.
I'll give you, like, I remember early in my career definitely focusing more on data science. And, like, one big thing for me, and they have two great websites, are Data Carpentry and Software Carpentry, are both amazing websites because they talk about both practices independently and how to build your skills. Mm. And they work a lot together, right, with things like Git, mm-hmm. showing data scientists what Git is, why versioning your artifacts and stuff matters.
And I say that not because that makes my life easier. It's like they define problems. I'm like, oh, we solve this with Git.
Yeah.
Right.
Like he's all like, you know, what if, oh, I'm going to have another data scientist in here with me. How do I not clobber his code and all that? Yeah.
Branch.
Yeah, exactly.
Here we go.
Yeah, GitFlow. And then now look, we can even deploy it, you know, based upon that. But yeah, I mean, it, you know, there's some little things that help them out. And you know, we've also been ragging on computer science programs that don't prepare folks in similar ways.
Oh, God. Oh, no.
Yeah.
Well, we get some really strong DS&A folks. We get some really poor ability to abstract or rationalize or just write good quality code sometimes. Like, they just don't know.
No, and they don't know about some of the tools and
practices. They don't know the tools.
Yeah.
No, they don't know the tools. Yeah. That's brutal.
That's my verbal pause there for. And then, sorry. I heard myself so loudly in my monitor. I was like, that's going to come across on the podcast. I was going to say, so the wind down, there we go, words. The wind down that we talked about last time was kind of a question, and then also what are we going to talk about next podcast? Mm. And I'm going to just dive into another podcast consideration. I like what you were just mentioning, Evan, about the generational divergence and that, like there's some interest there. So I'm going to look up some opinion articles, but also, and I don't want to have this discussion now, but I had not considered that, nor had I considered the power of something like ChatGPT for people to use to cross that. I love it. And I'm so happy. But I'm interested to consider and talk through details of stuff like that.
And there was a recent talk about that that we can address as well too, that I can send you a video of.
Yeah,
that was from some folks in the Nix Foundation and talking about AI and how to do like reproducible Linux systems and how AI could help with that.
Yep.
Yeah. There were a lot of people cleared up on
interesting
what it means to actually do complex software and what AI can do and how they're not the same thing.
Right. I actually was thinking more about, less about that skill set is one, but more about the loss of skill set from, for that generation.
Oh yeah.
And then just the infill of the skill set of being able to produce what they want to produce with just like meager
like
language
basic reading
skills.
And writing skills.
Right, but being able to fill in with that gap with some level of connectivity to some kind of large language models. So I'm curious about that. But I'm not. I know you're going to shake your head. I know you're saying it's not going to happen.
I'm good with it.
It's interesting. I'm good with having a conversation about it, though.
Because like one of the tools that we were talking about that they require, this is an old typewriter interface.
Yeah. Oh yes.
Call this some bitches.
Oh yes.
Yeah. Like, exactly. You know, so right? What? Mm-hmm. Yeah. What may the next generation come up with? That's where I have hope that they'll come up with something, and I'll hate it.
They'll go full Neuralink and put brain chips in their brain, and then the keyboard will be virtual with their brain.
Did you guys watch?
That's what'll happen.
Did you guys ever watch the feed on Amazon?
Oh no. But we talked about it.
Okay, I can't remember whether I said it, but I did. I've been getting more into it, and it's like it was definitely, as with lots of shows, right? It was definitely better at the beginning, and then of course it was
the writers trailed off at the end. Yeah,
I think like always. The thing I think about that personally is that the system is broken.
Oh yeah.
And that I think that we could be producing really great content if it wasn't for like the need for episodic content, and that's why it just breaks every show down, right? Like it just does. And the ones that it doesn't are Firefly or whatever that just, you know, can't get past a season because they weren't episodic and didn't get, you know, whatever. Now, Firefly, I don't know if I would never call it episodic, but let's not dive into it. But the point is that all the good stuff that used to be sci-fi, right? Like that sci-fi stuff was always super excellent, and it always died after like season and a half, something like that, became a cult classic. And it, to me, I have strong opinions about media, as you can tell, that I think it's because they actually weren't too episodic and they did have long story arcs, and it's just like that's not the way that the media production system has gone globally, and so we just can't do it. It's not possible.
Story arcs supposed to be a circle and end
exactly
where they started, hopefully.
Yeah.
Why would they continue and keep spinning?
And
then get worse and worse with each revolution.
Exactly.
Yeah. So. I blame Lost.
I'd love to blame Lost. God, I hated Lost.
Thank you. I always drop that a little bit. These days, I flinch a little less.
People like loved it, and they
went nuts over it.
And I didn't get it. I was just like, there's so much of it that I was just like, you're just mixing your metaphors anyway in this character. That doesn't even make any. Okay.
I'll just watch Lord of the Rings for the 107th time.
I know, right? I'll pull out my marked page in the Two Towers and read like this one part out loud to everybody and be like, this is the best part, I want you to know, because that's how much of a nerd I am. Okay, next podcast. Audrey, have any thoughts?
I think we talked about last time the like SLA conversation, came up again today.
We talked about customer requirements and scope again. I know.
So I think that's still kind of burning in the back of my mind.
Because
I also just admire how this org handles that.
Right.
I think there's a lot to compare and contrast from my experience. And I think there's a lot of like new innovations and ways that could even go. Times are changing.
Great.
The people that run businesses are changing too.
It's true. Post COVID, everything. Changed, really did. I'm still looking forward to all the things. We could just talk about that. Anyway, Evan, anything?
I think we talked about it. We're good. Yeah.
Okay, good.
We got plenty there.
We've got. You want to add anything else?
Nah, I'm just along for the ride, man, these days.
All right. I'm gonna hit the stop. We'll say goodbye to the audience. We will we'll see you over at the Patreon content if you wanna hear all the fun that we get to have after we finish all my structured podcast.
Yeah, this is totally unstructured.
Thanks for listening to Friday Afternoon Deploy, recorded and produced by the team at Lofty in Fayetteville, Arkansas. For show notes from today's show, past episodes, and links to our Patreon and merch store, visit friday.hirelofty.com. If you'd like to reach out to the show, or if you're local to the Northwest Arkansas area and you'd like to be a guest in person on the show, email us at podcast@hirelofty.com. That's podcast@hirelofty.com.